This program is part of the Cosmic Potato Podcast Network. For more shows like this, visit our website at cosmicpotato.com.
50 years ago, the world was introduced to a phenomenon. Star Trek was a show that would eventually become 6 TV series and 13 motion pictures. People from all walks of life have been affected by the characters and philosophy that Star Trek has brought to their lives. These are the stories of the fans, interviews with people who love Star Trek and feel that their lives are better because of it. This is their prime direction.
Hey everybody, and welcome to the Prime Direction, the Star Trek fandom podcast. My name is Sean Ray, and tonight my guest is going to be Tim Babb. Tim is a comedian from California, and he hosts a couple of podcasts, the Tancast podcast, which is a show that he does with a couple of friends who were his old roommates when he was younger, and it doesn't really have a topic. It's just three friends just talking about their week and talking about what's going on in their lives, a little bit of pop culture, politics, religion, that kind of stuff. It's just a funny show. So it's one that I recommend. It's one that I listen to every week. So and also he does the Can't Wait for Christmas podcast, which is Tim talking about all things Christmas, interviewing people that have to do with Christmas movies, answering questions about Christmas, doing Christmas lists, anything that you could ever want to know about Christmas. He talks about it on that show 52 weeks a year. So go and check that out. Both those podcasts are wherever that you normally get podcasts, like iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, all that kind of stuff. Other than that, I want to make sure that you know to come to CosmicPotato.com. Check out all of our other shows that we have to offer, like Captain Game Show, like Cosmic Potato, the Super Fan Talk Podcast, Wait You've Never Seen, Trial by Pilot, Review-A-Mania, Horns and Heroes. All those shows are available right there at CosmicPotato.com or wherever you get your podcasts. So go and check that out. And that's all of me rambling. Now on with my interview with Tim Babb.
Where are you from originally? You live in California now, right?
Yeah, I'm originally from California.
Oh, okay. Cool. All right. Did you have like a lot like brothers and sisters growing up or?
Nope, just the old just me.
What is your earliest memory of Star Trek?
I mean, I must have had a memory before this because I was telling a joke that referenced Star Trek. But I remember I'd seen a knock-knock joke on like a stand-up comedy show, and I was trying to repeat it to my dad, and he did not find it funny. It was like it was a knock-knock joke from Scotty to Kirk, like knock-knock, sir, who's there? I can't remember what the setup is, but that's what it. Okay, so it starts out like, just Scotty, when can we have the engines back online? I don't know, sir. When can we have the phasers back online? I don't know, sir. What do you know, Scotty? I do have a knock knock joke for you, sir. All right, a knock knock joke, Scotty. Knock knock. Oh no, sorry. Knock knock, sir. Who's there? I don't know, sir. I don't know a goddamn thing, sir. And my dad just looked at me like, what are we doing right now?
So how old are you now? So I kind of gauge what your history with Trek was.
I am 41 years ancient.
I'm the same age, same exact age. So primarily you're probably a Next Generation fan, right?
Yeah. I remember the original series as a kid, but yeah, I'm all Next Gen all the time.
How old do you think you were when you really, like, if you go back and think, when did I start becoming a Star Trek fan? How old was that Tim Babb?
That at least had to be like, you know, sophomore or junior year in high school.
Oh, okay. Okay, so you're talking about like Star Trek fourth or fifth season, something like that.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I remember I was deep in it by the time the Next Gen finale happened.
Okay. What do you think it was about the show that just drew you in?
That's a solid question. I don't know. I mean,
were you really into,
say, like, the, what's that?
Were you, like, into science fiction already?
I mean, definitely. Like, I was already, like, a Star Wars and a comics fan and just Transformers, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Anything about, I mean, I always was interested in outer space and robots and spaceships and stuff like that. And, like, I know, like, the popular answer is, like, oh, the utopian version of the future. I just wanted mankind to evolve. But I don't think it was that either. I found the shows super interesting. And that I feel like that's, I can't remember which way it went, but I remember Star Trek VI being, like, I'm one of the few who think Star Trek VI is the best of the Star Trek movies,
mm-hmm.
which is almost sacrilege to everyone.
Yeah. I don't think it's the best, but it's up there. It's definitely better than 5 or 3.
I put it up again. I like Wrath of Khan, but I think Star Trek Undiscovered Country is just amazing. I remember I made a high school girlfriend sit through all of them. And weirdly enough, we broke up.
Imagine that.
That's crazy.
Did you, like, have a lot of collectibles? Did you have toys? Stuff like that?
I know I had a phaser that I annoyed everyone with. It was supposed to be, like, that tiny, like, little hand... I mean, they're all handheld, but that little, like... like super, super tiny one from the first or second season of Next Gen.
Yeah.
But the toy they made was like, it was that, but it was gigantic so that it would make sounds and lights.
Yeah, right.
It was like the opposite of it. And I know I built a model Enterprise, Enterprise A before the retrofit. No, not even A, just Enterprise, no letter. No bloody A, B, C, or D.
Yeah. There was something about Star Trek that, I don't know, there wasn't really a lot of toys. Next Generation, they actually had more toys for the Next Generation than they had for the original series. Original mm-hmm. series is famous for just making toys that didn't have anything to do with Star Trek and just slapping a Star Trek sticker on the side of it and selling that. Next Generation, they actually started coming out with some action figures of the different characters and things like that. What about novels and comics and stuff like that? Did you ever get into any of that?
I remember I read, not only that, I can't remember what it's called. The Ship of the Line. There was a novel called Ship of the Line that took place in between Generations and First Contact, and it brought back Kelsey Grammer's character from the show.
Oh, yeah.
And I bought it in hardcover and read it. And then it came out in paperback, and I was like, oh, I meant to buy this, and I bought it. And I was a good 5 or 6 chapters into it, thinking, man, this is really, not reductive, but like, I'm like, I feel like this is very, like, covering the same ground they've already covered. And then I even put it away, like, I didn't finish it. And then I remember, and then I found the hardback. I'm like, that's because I've already read it. That's why it seems so familiar.
So was that the only novel that you remember reading?
I feel like I got more of them, but that's the main one I remember. Oh, some of the Shatner novels I got. Oh, actually, yeah, I got the big omnibus with like 3 of them.
Yeah, the novels that he claims he wrote.
Zing!
Right. Oh, okay. So you said that you were deep into the show by the time the finale came around. So
definitely.
So you're invested in those characters and everything. What did you think of the Next Generation finale?
Oh, it was amazing.
Yeah.
I loved the Next Generation finale. I agree with, I believe one of the writers said they'd wish they had made the finale Generations and Generations the season finale.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it was way more cinematic and interesting a plot. Although they all, yeah, anyway, I thought All Good Things was an amazing finale. I think probably still stands as the best finale of all the Star Trek series.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. I think that Voyager almost tried to remake the finale because their finale had a lot to do with time travel and all of that. But so the show goes off the air, and what was it, 3-4 months later, Generations came out in the theaters.
Yeah, Yeah, it was later that year, yeah.
So you were we're the same age, so you were probably 16, 17 when it came out. How excited were you that movie was coming to theaters?
Oh, that was why I made my girlfriend watch the first six, so that we could watch the seventh together.
Yeah.
And then we broke up before the seventh one came out. But yeah, I grabbed a bunch of people to watch it as soon as it came out, and then I went again, like the same weekend. And I remember we were walking out, and my friend thought it would be funny to say out loud in front of the line of people waiting to get in, "I can't believe Picard dies."
The same thing happened in the theater that I was at.
Which was funny because Picard didn't die.
Right.
And then my other friend said, "I can't believe Data turns out to be a woman." And that whatever anger might have been in the eyes of the people in line quickly dissipated as they realized we were spouting nonsense.
Right, yeah. They're not going to kill Picard. That's impossible. But, okay, so you were excited that the movie came out. How did you feel about the movie after you watched it?
I feel like it was a long time before I realized it wasn't that good a movie. I feel like it was kind of like it was Phantom Menace syndrome. I was like, oh yeah, I'm seeing Star Trek in the theater and this is awesome. And like, 'cause I think that was since Voyage Home, it was the first one I saw in the theater. Uh-huh. And so I was excited, and like my favorite characters up on the big screen. Data's got an emotion chip. Kirk and Picard are meeting for the first time. I'd actually gone to my first and only Star Trek convention not long before that. And I was super excited, and And then it wasn't until years later I was like, boy, they really underutilized Kirk, and right. They killed him off for no reason.
I saw the movie, like I said, we're the same age, so I saw the movie the same age that you did when I got married. I got married in 2000, and my wife had seen some Star Trek. Her brother was a big Star Trek fan, but she wasn't a fan, you know. So I made her watch that movie, and I had not seen it in a couple of years. And as I'm watching it, I'm seeing all the things that she's not going to like. You know, for one thing, she's not going to understand that because she didn't watch the show. You know, it was definitely a movie made for people who had seen the show. You know, if you had not, it's not a Star Trek movie that you can come into cold and just know what's going on. You have to know who all these characters are and stuff like that. And also, at the beginning of it, the scene with Kirk and Chekhov and Scotty, you know, that was supposed to be Kirk and Spock and McCoy.
And you can tell.
Yeah. I mean, Chekhov even made a reference. He said, you, you're all nurses now. Well, why would he say that unless he was a doctor?
Yeah.
You know.
and Kirk says something like, "I'm glad you're an engineer, because with tact like that, you make a lousy psychiatrist." I'm like, that is clearly a line that was Bones supposed to say, like, "I'm a doctor, not a psychiatrist," or something like that.
Right. Yeah, because Scotty leaned over at one point and said, "Is there something wrong with your chair, sir?" I was like, that's a Spock line.
Although it was funny. Like, yeah. James Doohan's delivery on that is perfect.
Yeah.
"Captain, is there something wrong with your chair?" Like, he literally, he legitimately doesn't understand why Kirk keeps standing up. I thought, there is definitely good moments in that movie, but it is certainly a flawed work.
I going back now, it seems strange to me to... We want to tie together the original series and the Next Generation. It seems strange to me to do that by introducing the one version of the Enterprise that we've never seen before, and creating that model and everything, creating that set, just so that you can do a 5-minute scene.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And then we never see that ship again on screen. I know they used it in novels and stuff like that. But so while the Next Generation was still on the air, Deep Space Nine hit the air at the same time. And it was the first time that two Star Trek series had been on TV at the same time. What did you think of Deep Space Nine when it started?
I was not super into Deep Space Nine until after Next Gen went off the air, and then that was all we had for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got more into it, and I don't remember. Like, I was definitely not as religious about keeping up with it.
Right.
But once Worf joined the cast, I followed it a lot more closely.
Yeah, I think that was calculated. They definitely wanted to bring in those Next Generation fans that hadn't made the switch. Mm-hmm. So bringing him in. And yeah, Deep Space Nine was definitely a show that you kind of had to keep up with week to week, because it was the first series that really kind of had that soap opera kind of feel to it, where every, like, each episode leads into the next episode, which we have.
Yeah, they had an overarching storyline.
It's pretty common now, yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So, you kind of groaned when I mentioned Voyager before. Did you not like Voyager?
I do not like Voyager. I feel bad because I know it's like the first woman captain, and it's so, like, I want to be on board for it, but the way they wrote and directed that character, like, I think Mulgrew has been on record as saying, like, they told her to take all the emotion out of it, and I'm like, it's just so, like, it's so unrelatable and so uninteresting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even when they added Seven of Nine, I was like, I still don't care. Like, unless it was just, like, if everybody on the ship was taken out and it was just the hologram of the Doctor and Tuvok. Like, Tuvok and the Doc is a show I would watch. Because those are the only interesting characters I liked on that show.
I don't disagree with you. It's my least favorite series. But there are some episodes of that show that I think are some of the best written stories, not necessarily because of the characters or the way that they're acted, but the actual plot. You know, I think that some of those episodes are the best out of all of the Star Trek series, but the one thing that I didn't like about Voyager was that they introduced this whole concept of the Maquis and the Voyager crew having to work together. And mm-hmm. then they promptly dropped that.
Yep. Everybody just fell in line, became rank Starfleet procedural after that.
Yeah. And there was so much that could have been done with that. And it was like around season six, they decided, hey, let's go back and explore that. Well, you know, it's too late by that point.
I remember I was the Cracked used to do these photo Cracked.com, which is like a humor website,
mm-hmm, yeah.
used to do these Photoshop contests, and one of the prompts was give an alternate title for TV shows that actually describes what they are. Or something I can't. The prompt was better written than that, but I just took a still of Voyager and in the Voyager font wrote Next Gen without charisma.
Oh, man.
That's what I felt like it was.
Okay, so what are your feelings on the Next Generation movies that came out after Generations? There were three more movies after that.
I love First Contact,
uh-huh.
which is not a controversial thing to say, I don't think. and then Insurrection, I was definitely underwhelmed by, and the more I watched it, the more I hated Nemesis. Like, it was just such an unnecessary, like, there was no reason for Data. I know why Brent Spiner wanted to kill off Data, but, like, the way it happened just seems so unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
And so much of Nemesis felt like we've done this before. Like,
yeah.
You're just mashing the plots of Undiscovered Country and Wrath of Khan into one movie. And also, like, they introduced the concept of a brother of Data, which we've never heard of before, and a clone of Picard, who looks nothing like the young Picard we've seen on the show before.
Right.
Like, why is he bald at that age?
Right. Exactly. yeah, when they go down to that planet and they find Data's head down there, that, mm-hmm. yeah, that rang out to me. I was like, yeah, they did that in an episode. they found Data
yeah.
head. Are there just Data heads all over the galaxy that they're going to find?
Yeah, Dr. Soong was just Dr. Data Seed, just like sprinkling it around. And also, it's a minor thing, but when they're driving that Doom buggy thing, which of course you want to drive a vehicle with wheels when you've got like all this, you know, flying technology, like,
right.
yeah, randomly. But Data is wearing goggles. I was like, why? I mean, I understand Brent Spiner probably needs them, but it makes no sense for the character to wear goggles.
That is true. I never
CGI
thought of that.
CGI those out of there. yeah, I was not a fan of Nemesis.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and it was also kind of directed by, who was the director? I don't remember now. But
Stuart Baird, I believe is his name, the editor from Speed?
Yeah, and he was on the record as saying that he was not a Star Trek guy. You know, he didn't really watch the show. He had never directed any episodes or anything like that. So, yeah, of course it makes sense to take Star Trek and put this in his hands, because we want to make a Star Trek movie that doesn't look like a Star Trek movie.
I mean, I probably get where the studio is coming from. Like, we want to broaden our audience, so we'll get somebody who, you know, will bring something fresh to the table, like they eventually did with J.J. Abrams. But instead of the dude, like, collaborating and being like, okay, let me bring in some people who know Star Trek so I can at least bring my vision to the existing thing, he's just like, I'm going to make my own thing, and he just sort of headlong waddled into that.
Yeah.
what a horrible send. I'm glad Picard's getting his own show again, because that was an awful send-off.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and it did not feel like they thought that it was going to be a send-off, because that whole Data death scene really felt like it wasn't a real death scene, because just the fact that they introduced B4 told me, well, yeah, well, they're just going to come back. They're going to put his consciousness into this new body, and he's going to come back. But then they never made another movie after that.
Yeah, I mean, that is what happened in the comics.
Yeah. Yeah, I have heard that. I haven't read those comics, but I have heard that. It felt like the studio wanted to make more Star Trek movies, but the actors did not. Like, they're like, we've been doing this for like 15 years now. We're kind of done.
Well, not only that, it made so little money. It made less money than Star Trek V, and that's not adjusted for inflation.
Yeah.
And I think they were like over a decade apart.
Yeah, they were. Okay, so you did not like Voyager. Did you like Enterprise?
I did not watch it when it first ran, but then it's when it started doing reruns on, I think it was Spike, I started watching it, and I was like, this is a good little show. And it only got better as it went. I could see why Die Hard, like the people who were actually in the camp for Enterprise really didn't like the finale, but I enjoyed it. I got the intention of, like, it's a love letter to Star Trek fans of all stripes, and so they're trying to, you know, cover. I get why. The agency away from the characters you love to know that they are just, you're just watching a holodeck simulation. Mm-hmm. But I like the show. It's obviously not my favorite, but I thought they did interesting and entertaining things with it. And I would have liked to have seen what they could have done had they continued.
Yeah. The problem with Enterprise was that the studio was so involved. They didn't even have Star Trek in the title when it started. They just called it Enterprise. Because the studio was like, we want to do something different. We're gonna take it back in time. We're gonna go before the original series. And when the studio finally decided to back up and let the writers and the producers do what they wanted to do with the show, which is why season 4 is so much better than the other 3 seasons, it was too late. They'd already lost so many viewers. And
yeah, they'd already poisoned the well of the fans, and they're like, we're not watching it. No, it's better now. I don't believe you.
Yeah, yeah. And season 4 was fantastic. The first 3 seasons weren't bad. They just, especially the first season, just didn't really feel like Star Trek.
Yeah, because it's half like the stilted, not stilted, but like the there's a unique way that characters talk and interact on the 24th century, or yeah, 24th century Star Trek shows, and it was part that, but also part like the lexicon of almost our time to try and combine the two, and it just, I don't know, I felt they mixed weirdly, and it didn't really work for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In that way.
Yeah. Okay, so after Enterprise kind of went off the air, we went into what I refer to as the dark era, the dark ages of Star Trek. How did you, as a Star Trek fan, cope with that period? Did you stay a Star Trek fan, or did you just kind of, well, that's kind of over, I'm gonna move on and do something else now?
I was still a Star Trek, like, I would definitely watch the reruns on Sci-Fi or Spike, because they was it Spike? Does it matter? It's not like they're paying for this advertisement. whatever channel would show the reruns, I'd be like, oh, Star Trek is on, I'll watch that.
Yeah.
In fact, I think for a while I would have just a couple on the DVR banked just in case I needed, this is before Netflix, like, right, in case I just needed a Star Trek fix. But yeah, I definitely still held on to, but I was definitely still hoping they would bring back the next gen in some way for a movie or something.
Right. Well, when the 2009 movie finally came out, were you excited about that movie? Because a lot of fans weren't.
Going into it, I was super skeptical of the movie.
I didn't particularly want
to see a recast original series. I'd heard J.J. Abrams, I heard things of like J.J. Abrams is going a completely different way. I'm like, well, then make something else. Don't call it Star Trek. And then the ads were like, this ain't your daddy's Star Trek. I was like, well, that's what daddy wants.
Right.
So I was definitely like, much like Casino Royale, like I was not looking forward to it. Like I was in the theater, arms crossed, like you, I dare you to make me like you, movie. I dare you. And in both cases, the movies won me over.
Yeah. So you did like what you were given.
Yeah. At the time I said it's like a cover band, a really good cover band playing one of my favorite songs. Like I don't feel it's quite Star Trek, but they're doing their best.
Yeah. Yeah. My main problem going into that movie was not the fact that they were recasting the characters, because that's what I was hearing a lot of. You can't have new people play these characters, you know. But my problem was that I knew that if they made this movie, this is before I had actually seen the movie and seen what they did. If they made this movie, then there was a good chance that we were never going to get a movie set in what I consider the prime timeline again. Because I didn't realize at the time that they were going to be making this an alternate reality, and when they brought in Spock, old Spock, you know,
mm-hmm.
you realize that the prime timeline is still there, and then this is something that branched off of that because of time travel. When I saw that, I was like, oh, okay, I'm good now, because that possibility was still out there. I didn't know if any prime timeline stuff was ever going to be made again, but I knew that there was a possibility of it coming back. So mm-hmm. what about,
yeah, I thought,
go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I think it may come into play more in your next question, so I'll wait.
I was going to ask you what you thought about Into Darkness.
Yep, it is. So a lot of people were like, similar to the complaint I had about Nemesis, was that, you know, Into Darkness was just a retread of Wrath of Khan. But I thought it was so cool that a major studio was doing a major release, which was essentially just like one of those DC Elseworlds or Marvel What Ifs of like, we're going to say the same thing you already know and see it happen in an alternate universe where things are different. I'm like, that is crazy. Because it doesn't take away anything from Wrath of Khan because it exists in a parallel universe. So it's like a feature motion picture of a, like a mirror, not the mirror universe, but like a parallel universe episode of like, now you'll see these things happen from a different way. I'm like, that's,
yeah.
I thought that was fascinating. I thought it was really weird that they cast Benedict Cumberbatch and for some reason tried to keep his identity a secret.
Yeah.
Like, we know he's playing Khan. Just say he's playing Khan. Just relax. Stop trying to hide it from us.
And when he revealed it in the movie, it was like, They set up the shot like it was this huge reveal, and I was like, no, I knew that.
Yeah, it's like, A, most of the audience knows, and B, most of the characters on screen with him have no idea who that is. So they're like, my name is Khan. They're like, okay, all right, Bill Khan. Like, do I know you? Like, why are you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then the original Khan was an Indian man that was played by a Spaniard. So mm-hmm. why not have a British guy play him in the in the new version?
I wish they had made some sort of like explanation of why he looks so like they genetically modified his appearance or surgically modified his appearance or something. Mm-hmm. Like I wish they had made some reference to that, because like it's such a departure from what we know of the character, and it makes no sense.
Yeah, my main problem with that movie is that they set it up in the timeline, in the time period that Space Seed would have been in, which is the original mm-hmm. appearance of Khan in the series.
Mm-hmm.
But they so wanted to make it Star Trek II, which is supposed to take place 15 years later. The characters are much older and have been Starfleet personnel officers for a lot longer and have a lot more experience and all of that, which really set up the big scene towards the end when they do the Spock death scene, but they switch it around so that it's Kirk instead of Spock. And I've said this on the show before, but it did not play well for me, because in the original movie, when Spock dies, you're looking at two characters that are basically brothers. They've been serving together for 15, 20 years. And in Into Darkness, it's two characters that have known each other for like a year and a half. You know?
It's true. But I also like that, like, instead of like the end of a long friendship, it was almost proof to young Spock what sacrifice for friend, or like what a friend Kirk was being. I mean, it's simplistic to say that he was doing it for the whole crew, but like he was sacrificing himself for his friendship with Spock that had been developing. So it's kind of like young Spock learns about what friendship is from that sacrifice, which I thought was an interesting interesting way to go about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I only like it in a world where the other stuff is all still there and exists, and this isn't like, oh, this is the new thing that erases that.
Yeah.
Like, this is just like, what if it happened this way? I'm like, I don't know, movie, what if it happened that way?
Well, what about Star Trek Beyond?
I really enjoyed that one. I was surprised it did not get as much love in the theaters as the other ones. Like, I think it's one of the least grossing of the... there's only three. I think it's the least grossing of the Abrams, of the Kelvin timeline Trek, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, you might be right.
Well, I know they were disappointed in the grosses, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I thought that it's... Out of the three, it's my favorite. I think that it's... It feels the most like Star Trek. It feels the most like a Star Trek episode. Which, you know, Simon Pegg came in and helped write the script, and he's a Star Trek fan, you know, so that helps. when you have Star Trek fans actually write your scripts, that really helps.
Yeah. I also like, so they were playing the not Beatle, the Beastie Boys song at the end, towards the end, you know.
Right.
And like, it's a plot point. And like, at first I'm like, this is ridiculous. And then all of a sudden it just, like, it gets to that point where it's like, ah! And they all explode. I'm like, I'm on board, movie. You won me over.
Yeah.
I was skeptical. I was like, I don't know. Okay. You win. You win. This is a good scene.
Yeah. It was a great scene. The only thing, I wish that they used a different song, because they had already used that song.
in the first reboot. Yeah. I still like, I like the callback to that song, and the fact that like Scotty calls it like oldies or something.
Yeah. So, the new version of Star Trek is Star Trek Discovery. Have you been watching that?
No.
You haven't watched it at all?
Okay. I refuse to pay for the CBS streaming service.
Okay.
I hate that all these people are splintering off and getting their own. And of course I'm going to buy Disney's because they own half the entertainment in the world. But I'm not going to get DC's. I'm not going to get CBS's. No, stop it. Even though they now, like, my arm is almost twisted because I want to see the Picard one. And actually, my friend's brother writes for Discovery, so I should be supporting it. But I just won't.
Yeah, I mean, okay. Well, I'm partial because I do a podcast. I do a Star Trek Discovery podcast. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, I watch it every week. But, I mean, I can see what you're saying. I argue with people because a lot of people say they don't want to pay. They don't want to have to pay for Star Trek. And my argument is that you already pay for Star Trek. How many DVDs have you bought in your lifetime? You know?
Yeah.
And then I say, and I always go back to when I went to go see Star Trek Beyond. Couple years ago, I took my whole family to the theater. We saw it in 3D IMAX. We bought popcorn, candy, drinks. I probably spent $75 to see that movie, you know. But yeah, I can see what you're saying about not wanting all these different companies to splinter off and make their own thing. I think that's going to change over time. I think that all that's going to kind of, it's got to go through stages. I think this is a stage where everybody wants to have their own service. I think that eventually some of that's going to kind of come together and coagulate, I guess.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, like, if they had released it on Netflix, I'd be all about, like, okay, I'm paying for Netflix, and now I'm getting this. Or even Hulu, which I don't subscribe to, but I'm like, maybe I would consider getting Hulu mm-hmm. for this. But I'm like, I'm not getting something that is just CBS content.
Well, what about the fact that the series, the season one comes out on Blu-ray in November?
Oh.
Would you buy the Blu-ray?
I don't know if I'll buy it, but I imagine it'll be at my local library not long after that.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, they are going to release it on Blu-ray right before Christmas. So just in time for the Christmas season. So there is that. There is another way to watch it. The other way that I tell people to watch it is that if you don't want to pay for it, wait until the season is out completely, which season one is out now. You can sign up for CBS All Access, and you get your first week for free.
Yes, I saw that, and then you could cancel.
Yeah.
And, like, there are people telling them to do that, like, after the first episode. I'm like, why would you do that the first episode?
Yeah, wait until the whole season's done.
Yeah. And, like, well, now that they've announced a season two and a Picard show, I'm like, well, I'm going to wait. And then I am apparently going to take a week off work and just binge watch everything on that app for a week.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I was going to ask you, what do you think about the news of a Picard show?
I'm cautiously optimistic for it.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like a lot of what makes Next Gen work is better grammar than that. A lot of what made Next Generation work was the ensemble. Like, I mean, who doesn't love Patrick Stewart? He's a great actor, but I feel like just him without the ensemble and without that same writing staff might not be as good, but I have faith that whoever is in charge of it is a fan of that show and will do respect to the character.
Yeah. The thing that I'm hoping that it is not is, you know, we're in a time period right now where all the old shows want to come back and do a new season. You know, we had Will mm-hmm. and Grace, we had Roseanne, you know, all that kind of stuff. I don't want them to do a Star Trek The Next Generation reunion show where Picard gets some kind of a mission that he has to go on, and he has to figure out a way to get everybody back together. Because it just doesn't make any sense for everybody to get back together. Because by this point, you know, it's 20 years later, 20 years after Nemesis, it does not make sense for all these characters that are spread all over the galaxy to come back together, get the band back together, and do one more mission. So I don't want that. If they're going to do a Picard show, I want it to either be about Picard or at least have him be like the bookend. Like he's kind of over everything that's going on or something like that. And we've got new characters and stuff. I don't want to see Worf and Geordi and Riker and they all figure out a way to get all back together and do one more mission.
I mean, you say that, and I'm like, that's exactly what I would like to see. I don't want that to be the whole show, but at least, like, that should be the finale.
I would not have a problem with, say we've got 8 episodes. I would not have mm-hmm. a problem with, in episode 4, Picard goes to see Worf, and then they have a adventure together in that one episode, and then it's over. I wouldn't be opposed to that. I just wouldn't want to see everybody like, we got to figure out a way to get all of them back together one more time. I don't think everybody would do that anyway. You know?
No, Sirtis, McFadden, and Dorn were just at a convention and they said they hadn't been asked about it.
Yeah.
So,
and Brent Spiner is in his 60s. How are you going to explain that Data looks like a 60-something-year-old guy now?
Oh, come on, you've seen those Marvel movies. They can just de-age him now.
Yeah.
They could just do whatever they did for Michael Douglas and Ant-Man or what they're going to do for Sam Jackson and Captain Marvel.
Yeah. Yeah. Or they'll just say, hey, yeah, well, he's got an aging chip now. Okay, so since you're not watching Discovery.
Sorry.
No. what do you hope for the future of Star Trek?
Well, I hope they get this deal worked out with Pine and Hemsworth so that we can get that fourth Star Trek movie made.
Yeah.
I am not at all looking forward to Quentin Tarantino's version of Star Trek.
I don't think that's going to happen. I think that's gonna go away.
I hope so, man. I mean, granted, I wasn't looking forward to J.J. Abrams' version, but like, I stopped watching Tarantino movies a long time ago. I'm like, and the last thing I need is that combined with Star Trek.
Yeah,
like that. Those are two mutually exclusive like pop culture entities.
Right.
I would like to see Discovery, or another Star Trek show come to broadcast television. Like, I feel like it's not getting the respect it deserves by being on streaming. Like, it's like, oh, that's just like a streaming thing for nerds. Like, if you want it to be like, look, Star Trek is back and it's on TV and people are excited about it again. Like, it needs to be on broadcast television.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it needs to be on CBS. That's my opinion. That's what I would like to see.
Yeah, yeah. The only thing is that they have always used Star Trek to try new things because the Next Generation was the first show that was ever like made for syndication television, and then Enterprise was the first. No, Voyager was the first series for the Paramount Network,
mm-hmm.
and now Discovery is the first show for their new streaming service. So they always use Star Trek because they know that Star Trek has a fan base. They always use Star Trek to try all these new things.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we're the only ones that have, for right now, we're the only ones that have CBS All Access. If you live, I have friends that I do shows with that live in the UK. They watch Discovery on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to pay any extra to watch it. So.
I still say, like, if you're selling you know, like, Jeeps and Burger King in between, like, now, like, this is a commodity that is, that demands respect and should be, so that's why I think it means something more if it's on, like, a broadcast television.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's what I would like to see, like, Star Trek is so popular, it's back on TV again. That's me.
Like
HBO. Oh, if they got an HBO, that would be sweet.
Well, that would be the Tarantino version.
Well, they don't need to swear or anything, but you know, because they could explore complex issues and not have to worry about, well, like, the sponsors aren't comfortable with this, you know, like, they do something that is analogous to like the kneeling for the flag thing going on now, and like, you right. know, somebody's like, I don't want to advertise on that, but like HBO is like, whatever. Which I guess I'm sure is a bonus to having it on their CBS streaming app, but still, I just think it would be better if it was like on I feel like streaming doesn't have that respect yet of being legitimate, for want of a better word, even though it is completely legitimate show in terms of, like, you know,
yeah,
cast and crew and everything that went into it.
Yeah, I think what you said earlier about it, if it was on Netflix, it would probably be more accepted because there's a lot of original content that's on Netflix.
True.
that people accept, you know, like all the Marvel shows and things like that.
Yeah, and like Stranger Things and yeah. I totally get what you're saying.
But I think that's mainly because people don't want to pay for another service.
Yeah, and like a lot of people already have Netflix, so like that's already in their life, whereas like I'm not getting this new thing.
Yeah.
Just so I can go watch reruns of The Late Late Show?
Yeah. They do have a couple of other shows on there, but they don't have anything that I've watched. I think there's like a spinoff of The Good Wife on there.
Yeah. I remember they were advertising that. I was like, do you think that's going to make me pay for this?
They are planning to make a like a new version of The Twilight Zone.
Yes, with Jordan Peele, right?
Yeah, I think he's going to be producing it or something. So that'll be interesting. But
mm-hmm.
One question that I ask everybody is that Star Trek has always kind of taught us life lessons and tidbits of philosophy and things like that. What do you think Star Trek did for you that made your life better?
I mean, it definitely ignited that spark of creativity. Cause I've written a ton of like fan fiction type stuff about Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I was in high school, like in between junior and senior year, I was in a play where I played Apollo, the god of Mount Olympus, and like there was all these muses and whatnot. And it was like they showed up in modern day times and were helping people. And I decided I would write a sequel to that play, which was also a sequel to Star Trek, which now saw the gods existing in the Star Trek world. And I wrote it as like an animated movie, and I actually got like tween girls to voice their characters in this Star Trek parody thing.
Yeah.
I looking back on it now, I'm like, that is unbelievable that it worked. Because it's not like I was some super popular guy. I was like, hey, guy, and nobody said no. Like at the end, and it was a huge cast.
Yeah.
I was like, you guys want to come back and do this thing? So like, it's the same thing we were doing, but it takes place in the Star Trek future. Like, okay, Tim, whatever you say. So yeah, I think Star Trek encourages, like, I know it instills like science or other stuff in people, but definitely like creativity. You're like, well, where else could this starship go? What else could happen with these characters? Oh, I also wrote a Star Trek, Star Wars, other Star Trek crossover where the Star Wars cast, the original series Star Wars cast, met the original series Star Trek cast, who also met the Next Gen cast. And I'm like, I remember thinking this will be a great movie, but as I look back on it now, I'm like, this would be unwieldy.
Yeah.
To keep all these characters, like, it makes Infinity War look simple by comparison.
Have you seen that? There's a movie with I forget the name of it now. There's a movie that's on Hulu right now that is about it's got Dakota Fanning in it, and she plays a girl that's autistic, and. Mm-hmm. But she loves Star Trek, and they have they have a contest. I wish I could remember the name of it. They have a contest where you can write a Star Trek script, and if it's chosen, they'll publish it in this magazine or something, and you'll win a cash prize and stuff. And the whole movie is about her trying to get her script to the studio because she missed the mail-in date or something like that. But throughout it, they play bits of her writing, you know, you hear her doing the dialogue in her mind and stuff, and she's reading it to people and stuff like that. So you kind of get a sense of what the script is, and it's kind of like that. It's like an all expansive epic tale that takes place in the Star Trek universe. It's got Worf, and he's going back in time and talking to Spock, and he's on Deep Space Nine and all this kind of stuff. So yeah, it works great as
please
a story.
Stand by.
Yeah, that's it. Please stand by. Yeah. It would work great as a story, but if they actually tried to film something like that, yeah. Okay, so, all right.
Yes, I...
No, go ahead.
I'm sorry?
No, go ahead.
No, I was just agreeing with you. Yes, I hadn't seen the movie, but I do. I remember seeing previews for it. I'm like, that looks interesting.
It is a good movie. I liked it. And you don't have to be a Star Trek fan to like it. That's just kind of the backdrop, you know. But, so let me ask you a little bit about Tancast. Tell me about Tancast.
Oh, boy. So Tancast is a podcast I do with my two old roommates, and it's called Tancast because my name's Tim, one of them's name is Andy, and the other's name is Noah. And when we used to live together, our house was tan-colored, and our first initials spell out tan, and that's exactly how creative we are. And it came up like just as I had gotten married and moved to Los Angeles, and my buddy Andy had already moved to Atlanta. So we like had split up. We didn't really talk that. We couldn't get together as much anymore. And right around that time, Kevin Smith and Scott Mosier had started the Smodcast podcast. And Noah, one of the guys on the show, had encouraged me to listen to it. I was like, well, this is interesting. But I thought podcasts had to be something more in depth, like, you know, research and like, you know, scripts or scripted or something. I'm like, this is just them talking about whatever.
Yeah.
I was like, we can do that. and so that is literally what it is. Just the three of us essentially catching up with each other every week. And we comment about like current events and whatnot, but it is not, what do you call a good show? It's not a show I recommend. It's not I'm like, oh, you should check out my podcast. I'm just like, oh, I have a podcast. Warning, if you listen to it, it's probably going to be awful.
I don't agree with that, but I see what you're saying. Yeah, it is funny, but it is a little blue. So if you're listening to this, just be warned that it's a little more off color than this one is, but it is hilarious. I love it. I've been listening. I don't think I've ever message you guys or anything before I message you about this, but I've been listening to it since, well, before you had kids, I know. So because you didn't have kids when wow. when I started listening, so a while back.
So that's at least 7 years.
Yeah, I've been listening for a while. Okay, well, that's pretty much it.
Well, can I plug my actual podcast that I actually do want people to listen to?
Absolutely.
Is that all right?
Yeah.
So I do another podcast called Can't Wait for Christmas, which is a year-long podcast. It comes out on the 25th of every month, and it's about, you guessed it, Christmas. And that one is, if you can listen to it, it doesn't matter. Like, it's a nice quality, family-friendly content. There actually is research involved with it. Like, our latest episode was about Elf on a Shelf, how it's incredibly popular, but I haven't met anybody who likes it, which is why we called it the Nickelback of Christmas. Yeah. And the next episode coming up, we have a special guest, Jeff from the Mousetalgia podcast is going to be on. So that's cool. And that's exclusive. I hadn't mentioned that anywhere else but here. So yes, that is the show that I actually encourage people to listen to because I actually put some time into it, hoping it will be enjoyable.
I saw somebody sent me a link the other day where you can now rent the house from A Christmas Story and sleep in it. Which mm-hmm. which seems like something I would love to do, but also seems like an incredible waste of money. Because it's like $400 a night or something like that. It's crazy.
I mean, that's cheaper than staying at some of the Disneyland hotels.
Yeah, it's true. But I live in Alabama, and it's in Indiana, so there's basically nothing else in Indiana that I'd want to go see.
Yeah. There's nothing else Indiana adjacent that you're like, well, as long as I'm here.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you one other thing. Tell me about the process of getting on Wipeout. How did that happen?
Oh, so I was down in LA doing, I had a week at the Ice House in Pasadena, and it just happened to be when they were holding auditions for Wipeout. I was like, well, I don't know what that means, but I'm doing it. And so I showed up actually in my Star Trek uniform, because that was going to be my bit that I was like a nerd. And mm-hmm. So basically they just had you come in a room and like you answered some questions, and I did if you've seen me on Wipeout, there's this thing I do at the beginning where I just sort of drop, not even to my knees, where I'm just dragging my what seemed like limp legs behind me while walking on my hands.
Right.
And I did that in the interview, and I think that's what sold them on me. But like, you don't run or jump or do anything physical. They just talk to you, because what they really want is to see if you have a personality that's going to be interesting on camera. So they want to make sure you have an outgoing personality that will translate well to. So you're not just running through silently and not very interesting to watch for the home audience. They want to make sure you're saying things and you know you can quip and just be loud and above all either obnoxious or interesting. But as long as you're saying something is kind of what they want. Which sounds great until they get 24 of those people in one room together and they're all waiting for their turn to go. And that is 24 loud, abrasive, A-type personalities who want to talk all the time.
Yeah. And don't really want anybody to get through the course. I mean, they want you to fall and get smashed in the face and everything else. So
yeah, it's not called the show where people show their skills of dodging objects. It's called Wipeout.
Yeah, it's not American Ninja Warrior or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did like at the beginning, she asked you a question and you just said, I wasn't expecting that question, and I don't have an answer.
Which is funny, because they had said, she's going to lead you into this, which you said in your interview, and then she asked me a question that I was like, how am I supposed to get from there to there? And that's why I was like, I can't make this lane change. Like, I don't know how you're expecting me to answer with this answer to that question. And so that's what and then they put that on the show, like, Tim doesn't know what he's talking about.
All right. Well, that's all I've got. I appreciate you being here.
Oh, thank you for having me.
The Prime Direction is part of the Cosmic Potato Podcast Network. It can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and of course on our website at cosmicpotato.com. Please be sure to leave us a review wherever you find the show. That will go a long way toward helping other people find the podcast. Every fan has a story. If you would like to come on the show and tell me the story of your Star Trek fandom, send me an email at mail@cosmicpotato.com. Remember, there are a lot of people that want to be on the show, so please be patient, and I'll write back to you as soon as possible. Thank you for listening to the show. Be sure to look for more episodes as I continue to bring you more stories of Star Trek fans and their prime direction.